Biggin Hill i maj 1982. Kuratflygningen av ett flygplan som heter Fournier, tillverkat i England. Litet, lätt glid, motoriserat glidflygplan.
Yeah.
National Aerobatic Team. som bär sig fullständigt vansinnigt åt till luften. Tvåvingat plan, menar jag.
Engines, and they have full oil and fuel capacity for indefinite
Saab, vi ser Saab 15 i luften.
First Lieutenant Rasmus, Bo Rasmus, the Royal Danish Air Force. Round in a couple of loops. Side by side, two-seater, a slightly unusual look. Habitués, and as they say, sons of habitués. And Biggin will recognize this aeroplane as basically as the Bolko Jr. Developed out of that, designed by the same man, Bjorn Andreasen, who designed the little BA-4. Volca built in Germany, this one built by Saab in Sweden. And it's a developed version which is used for training, light ground attack, the mini trainer, by the Swedish Air Force. Also for civil use. 22 Swedish Air Force. Trainers, 12 army ones. Army uses basically as a primary trainer for artillery spot. 200 horsepower carrying engine. Six underwing hardpoints built into the spars for carrying emergency stores for disaster relief. The military trainers did a marvelous operation some years ago in Ethiopia. The most impressive airdrop of supplies. Carry a couple of 24-man life rafts. Useful for a great many purposes. The artillery liaison of training drills. Can fit a third seat in the van for some reason. Normally, it's a two-seater. It's one of a very popular type of military aircraft. It's light, it's easy to maintain, it's comparatively cheap, very cheap to buy compared to more sophisticated aeroplanes. And it's a true multi-role aeroplane. We give some indication you can use it for virtually anything. You can put machine guns or bombs or rockets if you want to be aggressive. Aggressive is known in Empire days of keeping down the heads of the natives. Or you can put rescue stuff, you can carry firefighting equipment, water patrol, pipeline, inspection, comparatively slow, very stable, nice little aeroplane, useful in a number of very humdrum roads around a nice
helicopter.
Five of these were ordered by the Pakistan forces. Max takeoff weight is about 2,500 pounds. Not all that much heavier than some of the more lumbering biplanes. And he's got a little knife edge as well. Quite well equipped for that, the specialist bits. We have something which is a very familiar sight to a great many people, I dare say, coming out onto the tarmac, being smartly overtaken by something which is not a familiar sight to anybody, because in its first display season, taxiing out there is Rayhanna, unique Rayhanna, in his new Pilatus P2, made up in the markings, period markings of Swiss Air Force fighter. First display season in Britain. He's holding, I think, coming on later. Very shortly, but I think most of us are familiar with Ray's flying.
Ja, han talar om en stor DC-9. Han nu startar en schweizisk flygplan.
But on the other runway we can take off is the hero, the head of it, if you like, the Cadell Bates is feminine, of that well-known Yorkshire television series Airline. One of the two Dakotas of Ruskin Air Services, Jack Ruskin's Pride and Joy.
Nej, det är DC-9 som startar.
Dakota.
Inte DC-9 utan den Dakota.
Transport aeroplane, the greatest aeroplane, transport aeroplane of all time, it's got to be. I just want to die. Hydraulics and the controls all came straight out of the message script 109E. And coming in from your right. Rayhanna, in a very characteristic approach. I don't reckon that wingtip varied half an inch in its height. And speaking of competitions, John Blake has already mentioned that we have our rubber team diving towards us and coming up into a beautifully big formation. On the way down, the speed builds up as the Marlborough pits enter the cloverleaf, the manoeuvre which is used to change direction. The white smoke streaming from the aircraft to the right and left of the leader, Philip Meeson, whose aircraft has been specially modified not to carry smoke, as he prepares to defend his British World Championship title next weekend. The other two aircraft. And now we approach the end of the first phase of the display, and the Marlborough formation shows you an elegant cloverleaf and then splits for synchronized aerobatics with Philip Meeson pushing away, experiencing negative G and rolling away to the front, while to the right and left, Nigel Lambert and Billy Simmons show us a synchronized stall curve. Now a good one for any of you for the amateur photographic competition, as they roar in toward each other for the opposition loop with a closing speed of 360 miles an hour.
Allora
and the aircraft now pull up vertically and roll and pull over at the top before coming in for the next opposition manoeuvre.
Yeah, no, no, no.
Another good one for photographers, the knife edge crossover. Holding the aircraft on the inverted and putting it over at the top of the manoeuvre. Before flying into the centre to rejoin. The pilot on the left, Bill Simmons, is the newest member of the team, flying here in only his second three-ship formation display of the season. He recently joined us from the Royal New Zealand Air Force, where he was flying in the Jet Provost formation display team and ended up his career flying Skyhawks, which I believe have been in the news recently. And on the B-axis, the aircraft come flying towards us.
Mitchell-bombare, kommer nu.
That was unsuccessful in that.
and the design was switched to that of a bomber with a bigger bomber and a bigger crew, with the highly successful result that you see. One stage, the J model was fitted with a standard Army 75mm field gun in the nose for attacking submarines. Two in the tail and one each side in the waist gun positions, and two in a ventral turret. The ventral was taken out, in fact, or best not. Half-inch machine gun on this part of the medium bomber. An unbelievably aggressive aircraft. The which was ostensibly our ally, and the crew were interned for the rest of the war. Again, rolling a mine. Marking she's carrying, I'm speaking Italian from memory now, I think those carried briefly of the B-25 squadrons in North Africa, immediately after the North African landing. Command Gazir, Appeal, and Hendon. Carrying to the Royal Air Force tail line. Slow run in this time. Here, Lowen. I don't think anybody'd ever dreamed of taking a twin-engine airplane off a carrier, let alone a heavily loaded bomber before. That Doolittle raid was an astounding piece of work. And by the way, that's a different work. Many of you will already have seen Stefan Karpovsky flying G-Hop, the Scarlet Hunter that last season was operated by Spencer Black, now Walter Mike Carlton. And Steph is with us again here today, I'm delighted to say, and he's flying a brand new airplane, brand new to us, first time ever at Big In. First time, I'm pretty certain, of any flight display seen outside the United States. I surmise they've got a minor starting problem on the back end, something blue which didn't come to done.
Det var en Hawker Hunter som startade.
The Caldros vintage contribution to our program this afternoon. The Hawker Seahawk. I understand he's going to go straight into his display.
Maybe Mustang.
Two pints of Guinness have just arrived. Isn't that a beautiful sight? And lined up on the runway behind him with a three very famous aeroplanes that I certainly never tired of seeing. I don't think anybody ever tired of seeing. From HMS Heron, the Royal Naval Historic Flight, the Fairy Swordfish, leading the Fairy Firefly, and the Hawker Sea Fury. The noisy engine too. to maneuvering and taxiing. And we don't want to have an accident, so he's back behind the barriers. Thank you. Something just under 550 Seahawks were built by Hawkers, mostly by Armstrong Whitworth aircraft for the Royal Navy. The second jet fighter, the first really successful jet fighter that the Navy had. Same stable as the Hunter, of course, and subsequent, which is basically a swept-wing Seahawk. Very nearly.
Seahawk.
It carried the standard offensive armament of the day. It was a single-seater powered by Rolls-Royce Neve engine. There must be about the only Neve engine still flying, I think. Just a few odd ones in Canada. 420mm Hispano cannon in the nose. 1,000-pound bomb if required under each wing or rocket.
Swordfish.
German midget submarines, Ken Gustavs. It outlasted its chosen successor, the Albacore, which was such a beastly airplane that they went back to the Swordfish. And it still stayed in its original form, right through to the end of its career. That an aged, slow, wire-braced biplane, regarding with such affectionate amusement that all its crews just called it the Stringback. After the fall of France, they spent their summer bombing and laying mines in the French ports along the Channel. They carried out the first air raid on Italy in June 1940, flying with borrowed French Air Force bombs from the south of France and the 767 squadron, a training unit. Unbelievable, old lady.
Firefly.
Lieutenant Commander Featherston, looking as if he's enjoying himself. Firefly succeeded the Fairey Fulmer, which was a sort of two-seat fighter based loosely on the Fairey Battle, which went into use as a long-range reconnaissance fighter, two-seater reconnaissance fighter, with the Royal Navy carrier. Thank you. most of the Firefly came in towards the middle of the war, so it took over largely from the former. It was the first really powerfully armed, fast fighting aeroplane that the Navy had yet acquired for use on carriers, with long range and considerable navigational capability and a fairly heavy bomb load. 420mm cannon, 2,000-pound bombs. Virtually the same load, in fact exactly the load of the later Seahawk. Served mostly in the Far East, carried out some very successful strikes against Japanese shipping, and it served on the light fleet carriers in the Korean War. And it won two serves. Coming in now from your left for his first
time. Seafury, coming up.
Hawker Seafury, SB-11.
Hawker Seafury.
Time the Fury was available, the Royal Air Force had lost interest in piston engine aeroplanes. They'd already were going into the Vampire and Meteor. So a navalized version was whipped up at Kingston and offered to the Royal Navy, and it was just what the Navy wanted. It was very fast. 160 miles an hour. In fact, it was allegedly the fastest production single piston engine fighter of its day. It had standard armament. They need hardly repeat it. 420mm, 2,000 bombs or rockets. It also served with distinction of the fleet carriers in Korea. One even shot down a MiG-15, which blundered across its sights one day in a moment of aberration. Great surprise to both of them, I suspect. Very successful ground attack aircraft. Was the role that it was largely called upon to fulfill, of course, in Korea. Sinker. Piece of local history when the Swordfish was Firefly coming into land. Firefly carries two badges on either side of the fin. R for HMS Glory and K on the other side for HMAS Sydney, throttle vendors. An aeroplane quite unexpectedly in the last apparent days of its service. All back to the colours. The British Aerospace 4-jet Delta Bomber, the Vulcan. Finally settled on Mars from Earth's planets suite. The was another tune we were going to play, but I saw no reason for putting more money in Andrew Lloyd Webber's pocket. This is a Vulcan B Mark II. The standard Royal Air Force Bomber Command, or Bomber Group of Strike Command, one group of Strike Command. Long-range bomber. In its current non-nuclear mode, carries 21,000 pound bombs. And anybody who's ever seen a full stick of 1,000 pounders bursting from a Vulcan, it's an exceedingly impressive sight.
Lancaster, and Spitfire, and Hurricane.
Spitfire and Lancaster from the Memorial flight. Breaking after that impressive arrival for their individual displays. Oops, I think we're going to get the Hurricane coming in first. Now, I can't tell you who is flying the two fighters, I'm afraid, because the information has to fill the tunnel. You want to need a Scott Anderson, the new commander of the Memorial flight. I know he's flying the next. This target, like the other one held by the flight...